You're listening to the CyberWire Network, powered by N2K.
Hey, everybody. Today, I want to highlight a name that all of us know well, and that is our sponsor, Splunk. You need to keep operations humming around the clock, but potential disruptions are everywhere. Splunk helps you predict problems and find and fix issues fast so you can reduce risk and ditch downtime. The world's largest enterprises rely on Splunk's unified security and observability platform to become more efficient, resilient, and innovative. With Splunk, you can react quickly, evolve faster, and be ready for anything. Stay ahead of disruptions. Learn more at splunk.com/resilience. And we thank Splunk for sponsoring our show. In the dynamic world of enterprise security, identity architects and IT leaders face a major challenge. Growth by repeated acquisitions multiplies the complexity of everything. Multiple IDPs, MFA providers, policy engines that all need to coexist. This can lead to fragmented user identities and policies that create security vulnerabilities and add access friction. Strata Identity solves this. Now you can decommission unneeded IDPs and consolidate the ones you'd like to keep without rewriting apps or disrupting users, engineers, and app owners. Plus, Strata's modular architecture makes it easy to integrate with any identity provider without manual maintenance and coding. Join the ranks of cybersecurity leaders using identity orchestration. Visit strata.io/cyberwire, share your top identity security priorities, and receive a pair of complimentary AirPods Pro. Offer valid for organizations with over 5,000 employees. Step into a new era of identity management at strata.io/cyberwire. IBM reports on the cost of a data breach, personal apps as a potential business risk. Over on the dark side, there's help wanted in the C2C labor market. An employee engagement study reaches predictably glum conclusions. Betsy Carmelite from Booz Allen Hamilton on reducing software supply chain risks with S-bombs. Our guest is Elaine Lee from Mimecast, discussing the pros and cons of AI in cybersecurity and why so much attempted DDoS, but not so much ransomware. From the CyberWire studios at Data Tribe, I'm Dave Bittner with your CyberWire summary for Wednesday, July 27th, 2022. IBM Security has released its 17th annual Cost of a Data Breach report. The research, conducted by the Poneman Institute and sponsored, analyzed, and published by IBM Security, analyzed 550 organizations that fell victim to a data breach between March of 2021 and March of 2022. Researchers found that 83% of organizations had more than one data breach. It was discovered that 60% of the breaches led to increases in customer prices, with the costs of a data breach averaging $4.35 million. The critical infrastructure sector was disproportionately impacted financially by breaches, with impacted organizations averaging costs of $4.82 million. It pays, however, to have protection in place. Just over $3 million was saved on average by companies with fully deployed security AI and automation systems, and $2.66 million was saved by companies with an incident response team and plan. IBM thinks data breaches are having an effect upon economic conditions in general. The company said, "The findings suggest these incidents may also be contributing to rising costs of goods and services. In fact, 60% of studied organizations raise their product or services prices due to the breach, when the costs of goods is already soaring worldwide amid inflation and supply chain issues. The toll, breaches exact, amounts to an invisible cyber tax. Netskope has released a report detailing the common use of personal apps in business. Cloud app use has seen an increase of 35% just since the beginning of 2022, with the average mid-sized business with between 500 and 2,000 employees using 138 different apps. Personal app and personal instance usage increases in the 30 days before employees leave an organization, with 20% of users uploading unusually high amounts of data before their departure. This might be innocent, but it does inevitably raise suspicions. Netskope explains the distinction between a personal app and a personal instance. They say a personal app, such as WhatsApp, is an app that only sees personal usage from personal accounts. A personal instance is a personal account of an app that is also managed by the organization. For example, someone's personal Gmail account in an organization that uses Google Workspaces is a personal instance. The current trend represents an increase of 33% from the same time last year. Personal app usage is most prevalent in the retail sector, with nearly 4 in 10 employees using them, and it's least prevalent in the financial sector, where fewer than 1 in 10 employees were found to be uploading, creating, sharing, and storing data. Interestingly, it was found that many organizations use apps with overlapping functionalities. Mid-sized companies, on the average, use 4 webmail apps, 7 cloud storage apps, and 17 collaboration apps. This obviously suggests an unnecessary expansion of an organization's attack surface. The Council on Foreign Relations looks at the recent record of Russian cyber operations, particularly from the country's privateers, and asks why ransomware attacks against Ukrainian targets seem to have fallen off after an initial wave of pseudo-ransomware wiper attacks. After all, it's not like gangland isn't connected to the organs. Conti is, or at least was, tight with the FSB, and Evil Corp danced with both the FSB and the SVR. So it's not as if there's a lack of either juice or direction. They suggest a range of reasons for this, but come down in the end to the privateer's profit motive. But Ukrainian victims are unlikely to have much incentive to pay their ransom and may have small ability to do so even in the unlikely event that they wish to. None of this minimizes the ransomware gang's connections to the Russian security services, nor should it be taken as a counsel of complacency, rather the opposite. If you look like you could pay, you can expect to be regarded as a potential target. Tessian has shared the results of an employee engagement study detailing that nearly 1 in 3 employees, on average, do not believe that they play a part in the cybersecurity of their company. Reportedly, only about 39% of employees surveyed say that they're very likely to report a security incident, with 42% of respondents reasoning that they wouldn't know if they caused a security incident, and 25% saying that they just don't care enough about cybersecurity. About 3/4 of organizations have experienced a security incident in the last year, despite IT and security leaders ranking their security posture as 8 out of 10 on average. Nearly half of all security leaders say training is one of the most important parts of the cybersecurity puzzle, but only 28% of employees in the United Kingdom and United States report that they find the training engaging, and alarmingly, only 36% pay full attention to the training. We don't want to throw the first stone here. After all, we all remember our high school careers, and 36% of our full attention would have made our teachers proud. But maybe an hour of PowerPoint once a year in the break room isn't the royal road to practical wisdom in these matters, even if donuts and coffee are provided. And finally, maybe this great resignation we keep hearing about is a problem for the criminal market as well. Huntress contacted us yesterday with a note about the way they're seeing threat actors target managed service providers in their supply chain attacks. They said, Huntress researchers discovered a beeper thread from July 18, 2022, looking for a partner to help process stolen data from over 50 American MSPs, 100 ESXi, and more than 1,000 servers. The hacker boasted a high profit share, with only little left to do before exploiting the data. Huntress reminds us that this also seems to corroborate the threat to MSPs the Five Eyes warned of on May 11th of this year, the Five Eyes being Australia, Canada, New Zealand, the United Kingdom, and the United States. Their observations also confirm something about the C2C market. Its criminal players suffer from the same human resources challenges the rest of us do. Here's the text of what amounts to a criminal's help wanted ad. Looking for a partner for MSP processing. I have access to the MSP panel of 50-plus companies, over 100 ESXi, 1,000-plus servers. All companies are American and approximately in the same time zone. I want to work qualitatively, but I do not have enough people. In terms of preparation, only little things are left, so my profit share will be high. Please send me a message for details and suggestions. Well, friend, here's a suggestion. Your profit share might be high, but why would your prospective employees care about putting Dogecoin in your wallet, cold, virtual, or otherwise? I mean, they have expenses and obligations, too. What about their profit share? Well, things are tough all over. Here's a thought. Promise the goons you hire that you'll never make them sit through a quarterly PowerPoint in the break room. People hate that, or so we hear. We don't do break room training at the CyberWire headquarters, but if we did, we'd certainly provide donuts and coffee.
And now, a word from our sponsor, Zscaler, the leader in cloud security. Cyber attackers are using AI in creative ways to compromise users and breach organizations. In a security landscape where you must fight AI with AI, the best AI protection comes from having the best data. Zscaler has extended its Zero Trust architecture with powerful AI engines that are trained and tuned by 500 trillion daily signals. Learn more about Zscaler Zero Trust plus AI to prevent ransomware and AI attacks. Experience your world secured. Visit zscaler.com/zerotrustAI. Don't struggle to align your organization's cybersecurity with business risk. Get the only solution that goes beyond reacting to threats with vulnerability and risk monitoring. You need the next evolution of MDR, and only Critical Start delivers it. Critical Start doesn't just monitor and respond to threats. They put you in control by detecting suspicious activities, quickly responding to contain threats, and identifying your most critical assets and protecting them against vulnerabilities and exposures. With continuous visibility, expert guidance, and measurable risk reduction, Critical Start has redefined what it means to manage cyber risk. Demonstrate provable security maturity to your leadership while positioning your program to achieve the greatest risk reduction per dollar spent. Stop fearing risk and start managing it with Critical Start. Visit CriticalStart.com and request a demo today. That's CriticalStart.com.
Elaine Lee is a principal data scientist at Mimecast's CyberGraph team, and I caught up with her for her take on artificial intelligence for cybersecurity, where it works well and where it's still got a ways to go.
AI does very well at picking up on anomalies. So basically, with AI systems, they have a lot of computing power and capacity at their disposal. So it is able to just leverage all of that to be basically super vigilant, hyper vigilant. So an average human can only pay attention to so much at the same time, can only incorporate and make use of so much data about its environment at the same time. Theoretically, an AI system does not have as strict limitations as a human would, so it's able to pay attention to much more. And as a result, it makes AI systems very suited for anomaly detection. So basically just looking for anything that's out of the ordinary. So that's what it's very good at. And I think a lot of adaptive AI and ML systems are built around this sort of idea that it's, you know, just look for something that's a little odd and then alert a human about it.
And where does it come up short these days?
So kind of going back to something I said earlier about generative systems, just basically new stuff entering the scene. I don't think we're quite there yet, AI systems might not be very adept at identifying new threats, new and emerging threats. I think a lot of existing current AI systems are built around recognizing known attack vectors and known just basically things that have been seen before, attack types that have been seen before. So if you try to do something new, it would take a while for an AI system to pick up on it, if it ever picks up on it. So oftentimes you still need that human in the loop to train the AI system to recognize a new threat type. So that is, long story short, it's not very good at detecting very, very novel threats.
So where do you suppose we're headed then? I mean, as you look at some of the things that are on the horizon or where the technology is headed, what does the future hold?
I think AI ML systems will get better at detecting novel threats, kind of touching upon something I said earlier about generative types of models. Maybe if the quality ends up being good enough, that those generative models, those outputs from those generative models could be used to inform new AI ML systems for defense. So that could be where we're headed.
In terms of people integrating this into their security defenses, how should they best calibrate the part that artificial intelligence plays?
It varies by organization, by team, by company, by culture. So the best advice I give is to just make sure the human is in the loop. Make sure you have a human that's involved in the calibration. Also understand the organization that you're trying to protect. The IT admin is definitely the best person for that. You know, that would then be their job to understand the population, the group of users that they're trying to protect, and therefore utilize the tools that's available to them, you know, be it AI ML enabled or just your ordinary cybersecurity tools. Just utilize them effectively to protect your team. It's not one size fits all advice, but maybe the only general advice I could give is make sure the human remains in the loop and can calibrate and adapt their security solutions to meet the needs of their teams.
That's Elaine Lee from Mimecast.
Managing the requirements for modern security programs is increasingly challenging and time-consuming. Enter Vanta. Vanta gives you one place to centralize and scale your security program. Quickly assess risk, streamline security reviews, and automate compliance for ISO 27001, SOC 2, and more. You can leverage Vanta's market-leading trust management platform to unify risk management and secure the trust of your customers. Plus, use Vanta AI to save time when completing security questionnaires. CyberWire daily listeners can get $1,000 off by going to vanta.com/cyber. That's vanta.com/cyber.
And joining me once again is Betsy Carmelite. She is a principal at Booz Allen Hamilton, as well as being the Federal Attack Surface Reduction Lead. I want to touch base today on Software Bill of Materials, also known by the catchy name SBOMs. I wanted to get your take on where we stand with this and what are some of the things that this is potentially going to do for us.
Yeah, thanks, Dave. Glad to be back. Following cyber events like SolarWinds and Log4Shell, SBOMs have gained massive attention as a solution for thwarting supply chain attacks. And so just for a definition of terms and understanding, an SBOM is like an itemized receipt for software to give software producers, buyers, operators a greater understanding of the supply chain so they can better track down vulnerabilities and risks, enable security by design, and make informed choices about software supply chain logistics and acquisition issues.
So in terms of integration, I mean, what do organizations have to do to be in compliance here?
Yeah, to envision how SBOMs fit into an effort to counter software supply chain risks in a more integrated way, we're recommending starting with a well-known military symbol. And so we've created a framework around this, the Trident. So this represents the cross-functional effort needed to counter software supply chain threats. So if you look at the Trident, the longest prong in the center is a set of techniques used for hunting advanced persistent threats. And on each side is another prong. One is SBOM implementation on the left and augmented data risk management on the right. So tips to kind of wield this framework within that Trident include ensuring your organizational policies and procedures allow for fast-moving implementation of the framework across software that touches all segments of your organization and consistently applying it. Also, engaging your employees regularly around ways to detect malicious activity through cyber awareness programs. This is really your basic cyber hygiene approach. Always educate and inform. Third, use APT techniques to discern vulnerabilities in tandem with your SBOM analyses. And then use the data collected from the SBOM analysis process and incorporate it directly into your risk management processes. Finally, we can't forget, we talk about it all the time, adopt the SBOM concept in concert with a zero trust security mindset.
So is the notion here with SBOMs that, you know, for example, the next Log4j comes out or something like that, that's, deep within the code of things I might be using, that I can just look through that software bill of materials and see whether or not I've got a problem?
Well, this is going to be one of the challenges. So cataloging and understanding all of the information that SBOMs contain is really going to be one of the first things that agencies will need to do. So finding that software, you're really going to have to make sure your cataloging is accurate and valid. So we see that as one of the challenges. There are a couple other challenges around implementing this, especially on the regulatory front. Just to back up a little bit, there is an entire section of the executive order devoted to software supply chain security. And we also expect forthcoming OMB guidance on secure development practices to make SBOM the standard for vendor self-attestation. And so basically, the OMB guidance will be put into contractual terms by agencies, and depending on the release date of that guidance, we may see some proofs of concept appear before the end of fiscal year 2022, but that guidance is likely not to be overly prescriptive. Going back to some of the challenges there, right now, agencies currently don't have the staff to meet OMB's guidance and requirements. The cataloging again, cyber fatigue, there are constantly new developments rolling out and new guidelines to follow. Sometimes it can be difficult to keep up with every new development, especially as we see OMB previously requiring agencies to comply with NIST's secure software development framework. That was precipitated by SolarWinds in 2020. Eventually, software vendors will be eventually expected to prove their compliance with that NIST framework, and vendors prefer self-attestation rather than third-party verification. So for the SBOM to be standardized and practically used, it's going to require deadlines for vendors and a concrete process that can be reapplied over and over again for using the information those SBOMs contain.
And what sort of timeline do you suppose that we're on here?
So what we've seen, the Biden administration at least put a clear timeline in place for complying with the adoption of zero trust and other measures. So we know that whatever timeline will be practically applied, and it's going to be helpful for federal contractors to allow them enough time to budget for the changes. So we're expecting at some point, within this fiscal year, for that guidance to come out.
All right. Well, Betsy Carmelite, thanks for joining us. that's the CyberWire. For links to all of today's stories, check out our daily briefing at thecyberwire.com. The CyberWire podcast is proudly produced in Maryland out of the startup studios of Data Tribe, where they're co-building the next generation of cybersecurity teams and technologies. Our amazing CyberWire team is Elliot Peltzman, Trey Hester, Brendan Karp, Eliana White, Liz Irvin, Peru Prakash, Justin Sabe, Rachel Gelfin, Tim Nodar, Joe Kerrigan, Carol Terrio, Ben Yellen, Nick Vilecki, Gina Johnson, Bennett Moe, Chris Russell, John Petrick, Jennifer Iben, Rick Howard, Peter Kilpie, and I'm Dave Bittner. Thanks for listening. We'll see you back here tomorrow.
And now, a word from our sponsor, SixthSense. SixthSense provides award-winning cloud-based automated endpoint and vulnerability management solutions to streamline IT and security operations. With its advanced platform, businesses gain complete visibility and control over their infrastructure, reducing IT and security risks and optimizing operational efficiency. With SixthSense, you'll get real-time alerts, risk-based vulnerability prioritization and remediations, and an intuitive automation and orchestration engine so you can focus on your core business goals, confident in the knowledge that your enterprise is secure, compliant, and running smoothly. To learn why enterprises choose SixthSense, visit SixthSense.com.